Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Basra, Daf Nun Vav, Nun Zayin. We will begin on Daf Nun Vav Amabeis with the Gemara, two lines from the bottom, just quoting what we learned in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Shlosha Achim Ve'echod Mitztaref Imohem. That if we have three brothers, as we discussed in our previous shiur, Ruvain, Shimon, and Levi, and another person, Yisrael, not related to them, and Reuven and Yisrael say Eidus regarding the Chazak of year 1, Shimon and Yisrael say regarding year 2, Levi and Yisrael say year 3, so they are considered like three separate testimonies. Harei Eilu Shloisha Eidus, the Halacha looks at them as three separate testimonies, and since they're considered three separate testimonies, they can be valid testimonies, because as we explained in our previous year, each year is looked at as a separate year. But they are considered one Eidus as far as Hazama is concerned. The Pshat that we learned in our previous year was that if somebody were to in order for them to become Eidim Zayimim, all of them have to be Muslim, because it's all of them together who create the sad situation of their being a Chazaka, and therefore in order to have a valid Hazama, all of them have to be Muslim. But if they all are Muslim, the dinim of Hazama will apply, as we learned that the Torah says, Vasisim loy kash Hazamim Kasha Zomam Lasois Laachis, says the Gemara. Hahushtara. And as we have discussed many times, the Gemara says Imsechtik Subis. The Gemara says Eidim Achsumim Al Shtar Nasa Kamishin Nachkra Edusim Bebezdim. That if Eidim is signed on a Shtar, actually, it's really halachically viewed, the Shtar is viewed as perfectly fine. However, Chazal required that if there's a shtar brought to Bezdin that says Reuven owes Shimon money, in order for the shtar to really be usable, it has to be mekuyim. It has to be certified. As the Gemara says, the best way of accomplishing kiyum is by having people come to Bezdin and having the actual edim who signed on the shtar come to Bezdin and recognize that this is their signature. However, that is not always possible because the witnesses may not be necessarily here. And as we've learned, the Torah gives us many different options. The Chazal gave us many different options on how to accomplish kiyum. One is if Bezdin has on file their signatures. Another approach that is suggested is if other people could come and testify that they recognize the shtar, the signatures. Says the Gemara, Hahu shtar, there was the shtar, that had signed in it two individuals. And shachif chad minayu, and one of the two individuals signed on the shtar passed away. So now, the signature of the aide who's still, Baruch Hashem, alive, is Mekuyim, by him coming to Bezdin and saying that this is his signature. The issue, however, here is the other signature of the witness who, unfortunately, is no longer alive. Shach Chad Minay. So how will we be Mekayim that signature? And it's important to point out, what we cannot do is take the witness who's Baruch Hashem still alive and has recognized his signature to be the person to come and say that this is my signature and I'm going, that this is my signature and that this is also the signature of my colleague. Why? Because if we're going to have that happen, we will have a fundamental problem. We quoted in the previous shiur the pasuk in the Torah that says, "Apishne edim yakum davar." Two witnesses are required to establish something halachically. But if we think about that pasuk is really telling us something much more. What the pasuk is telling us is that both edim have to be equal in strength, and therefore, if we will have a situation where one witness is speaking about his signature, so that's 50% of the shtar being verified, and now another aide will speak about, and then he will speak about the other signature, the signature of the individual who's not here, so that's another 25%. He'll come with another witness to testify about that signature, and we'll have a total of 75% mekuyim based on the testimony of one of the edim. And as we know, as we just said, the Torah says, "Apishne edim yakum davar." Nobody can have more than 50%. So this person who's an aid on the shtar, who has already testified about his own signature, cannot be an aid regarding the other signature. So who comes to testify about the authenticity of the other signature? The brother of the living aid. The brother of the witness who's still Baruch Hashem alive is going to be wants to be one of the witnesses to testify about the other signature. V'chadachrina, and he will come together with another witness to combine to testify about the authenticity of the other person's signature. So Ravina assumed that this should be considered an acceptable situation based on what we learned in our Mishnah. That our Mishnah, as we just quoted at the beginning of our Shir, taught us that Gimel Echim Ve'echim Mustafimam, the three brothers can combine together with another individual to say testimony. So the fact that there are two brothers saying testimony here should not be of concern. Amalei Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi said, Midami. You cannot compare the situation of our Mishnah to this situation. Hasam, in the case of our Mishnah, it isn't that two brothers together are causing that 75% of the money should be that 75% of the obligation should be confirmed. Because, as we said at the beginning of our shir, each one of these testimonies of each of the years is viewed as a separate testimony. And since each testimony is viewed as a separate testimony, one testimony has nothing to do with the other testimony, and they therefore are not an issue of brothers saying testimony together. Hacha, however, in our situation, nafik nichir rivad v'mamar apum da'achi, we're going to have that 75% of the 75% will be done based on the testimony of two brothers. And as the Mefarshim explained, the halacha views two brothers as being considered one and the same. And since they're viewed as one and the same, they cannot combine to say testimony. The Mefarshim point out, based on what we've just learned in our Gemara, that brothers, we've learned, cannot combine to say kiyum, to say testimony about edus together, about the authenticity of the signatures together. The Rish Taisus points out there is a way to avoid the entire problem, the entire issue that our Gemara has mentioned. Taisus says the way to avoid the issue is by having, we have, as we said, aid that's still Baruch Hashem alive, and aid that's not alive. Says Tosfos, what we should do is we should get the aid who's alive, just to sign on a chas b'alma, just to sign his name on a piece of paper, and present that piece of paper to Beis Din. Once Beis Din independently recognizes that signature, Beis Din will no longer need any kiyum on that signature, because that signature will have been established as that signature will have been established as independently verified. So what's going to be left is just the other signature, and for that other signature we can combine this person and that this aid and another person to say aid is on the other signature, because on the signature of the living person we don't really need any aid, we don't really need any aidus to say we don't really need any aidus. That's Tysus' approach. But there's a very interesting machloikis rishonim. Our Gemara clearly indicated that two aidim cannot, two brothers cannot combine to say aidus together, regarding to be the aidim regarding the kiyum of a shtar. The question that comes up is if aidim who are saying aidus regarding the kiyum of a shtar, can they be aidim? Can they be related to the malvin de loiva? And actually, it's a machloikus rishonim. And I saw that the mefarsh, so the opinion that says that they cannot combine is a fairly easy opinion to understand, because we always know, and as we've been discussing, relatives cannot be aided. But we need to understand why could relatives of the malva or the loiva still be considered valid witnesses for the kiyum of the shtar. So the Nesivus explains. The Nesivus says that the purpose of Edim for kiyum of a shtar is not to speak about what the shtar actually says, which then, if they're related to the malva or loiva, they're actually saying testimony on behalf of their relatives. The purpose of Edim on a shtar, explains the Nesivus, is to speak about the signatures. The signatures are not the malva and the loiva, and therefore, says the Nesivus, we can understand the opinion that holds that even eight relatives of the malva or the loiva could say aidus regarding kiyum of the shtar. A few words of introduction to our next Mishnah. The primary subject of what we have been discussing in our perek, as we well know, is the issue of what is of cheskes karka, cheskes riyah, which means, as we've said so many times, that if I claim that I bought a property from you and I'm on this property for 3 years, and then you come and say, what am I doing on this property? And I say I bought it from you, and the fact that you didn't say anything for 3 years supports that claim. Chazok Hashesh Maitaina, as been as the primary subject of this perek, the halacha would be that I would prevail in that din Torah. However, there's another type of chazaka. This is the way the Rashbam explains our Mishnah. So Rashbam says that the other type of chazaka is a cheskas tashmish. A cheskas tashmish means that I have a chazaka that I'm allowed to do something on this property. A cheskas tashmish, we have two machlokes rishonim that actually may be related. Some rishonim hold that a cheskas tashmish doesn't require a taina. Rather, that if I've been on your property for 3 years using your property and you haven't said anything to me, that gives me a cheskas tashmish. That I have that it's a proof that I have every right to use this property. However, there are other rishonim that say, just like the chazaka that we've been discussing mostly in this parak, needs to be a chazoka sheyesh imaytaina, so too, say the Rishonim, even a cheskas tashmish, to be considered a valid chazoka, has to be a chazoka sheyesh imaytaina. Which, as I said, is really related to, says the Rabbeinu Yoina, to another machlokes Rishonim. The Rishonim debate, what would be the halacha to achieve a cheskas, to achieve a cheskas tashmish? Do I have to have 3 years, or is a cheskas tashmish achieved even without 3 years? Some Rishonim say here too we need 3 years, and other Rishonim say no, that a cheskas tashmish doesn't need 3 years. Says Rabbeinu Yoina, what is the connection between these two machlokes? He says as follows. He says, according to the man the Omer that says that a cheskas tashmish requires a taina, he holds that a cheskas tashmish is like every other chazaka. And as we have Baruch Hashem been learning, a chazaka needs a taina, a chazaka needs 3 years. The other opinion, however, holds that what's the lomdus of a cheskas tashmish? The lomdus of a cheskas tashmish is mechila. If I'm using your property and you haven't said anything to me, it's a proof that you've given me permission to use it. You were meichel. Mechila doesn't need 3 years to be considered a mechila. And therefore, he will hold that a cheskas tashmish is accomplished with less than 3 years. There is, interestingly enough, to note, a machloikis, now that we've established that you don't need 3 years, how quickly will a cheskas tashmish be accomplished? Some Rishonim say, as would seem to be the din based on the way we're explaining, that it's accomplished immediately. However, there are other Rishonim that say that just because I'm on your property for a short while and you haven't said anything to me doesn't give me the opportunity to immediately accomplish a cheskas tashmish. And it has to be 30 days. If I'm here for 30 days and you haven't said anything, then it's a raya that I have a chazaka. But there's another opinion that says we have to look at every situation differently. We have to look at the situation of the owner and the owner of the property and the person who's using the property. We have to look at what type of usage is going on here to make a determination how quickly, even though you don't have to wait 3 years, to have a cheskas tashmish. So says the Mishnah, Eilu dvarim sheyesh lahem chazaka, in the following ways a cheskas tashmish can be accomplished, ve'eilu dvarim she'ein lahem chazaka, in the following way a cheskas tashmish cannot be accomplished. Explain, says the Mishnah, Hayamamid behema b'chotzer, if I put my behema in your chotzer, or I've put tana rechayim v'krayim, different types of an oven, a millstone, or a stove, or megalot tana goylim, I'm raising chickens, or nois and zivloi b'chotzer, or if I put my manure in your chotzer, in all these situations, ain't a chazaka is not established. However, aval os mechitzel behemtoi, if I erected a mechitzel for my animal in your chotzer, if it's kvoy asar tfochim, or I made a mechitza for Tana Kurayim, became Tana Mekanel Kurayim, became Rechayim, or Hichnas Tana Goyim Tachabayas, I brought chickens actually into your home, Vasim Mokim Lezivloi, or I made a place for the manure, which is Omek Shloisha or Gvay Shloisha, either three Tfachim deep or three Tfachim high. In these situations, Harezu Chazaka, then a Chazaka is indeed established. Ask the Gemara immediately, Mishna Reisha or Mishna Sefer? What is the difference between the cases mentioned in the Reisha and the Sefer? Why the cases mentioned in the Reisha do not establish a Chazaka, and why do the cases mentioned in the Sefer establish a Chazaka? Says Ula, Om Ula, Kol She'ilu V'Nichseir Ger Kona, any type of a Chazaka which is considered a Chazaka, enough of a Chazaka that I would be able, as we've learned at great length in the last couple of shiurim, that would be able to establish a chazaka, that if a ger dies without any relatives, I could make a ma'isa chazaka and take ownership of this property by doing such a chazaka. It's considered a good enough chazaka to establish the cheskas tashmish. However, kol she'il b'nechse ager loikana, anything which isn't enough of a chazaka to establish ownership over a nechse ager, b'nechse chaveroi loikana, it won't be enough of a chazaka here either. Ask the Gemara, Maskel of Resheshes, V'klaluhu, is this a rule, that these two types of chazakas travel together? And whatever is good enough of a chazaka for a, to be koin in nechse hager, is good enough of a chazaka here, and vice versa, v'rei near. Plowing a field, that certainly as we have been discussing, the benechse hager kana would be an adequate chazaka to take ownership of the nechse hager, but the nechse chaver leikana would not be adequate in taking ownership of a cheskas tashmish. Because as we learned back on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, the Gemara says the reason why plowing is not considered an adequate maisa chazaka, because the person who owns the property could always say, you know why I didn't protest? I'm very satisfied. I should always be so lucky that somebody should come along and plow my field. And that's why plowing, we learned, is not considered a valid act of chazaka. Or, another example, very chilas peiris, eating fruit, the v'nechse chaveroi would be a raya of a chazaka by nechse chaveroi. If I'm eating your fruit and you didn't say anything, certainly I establish a chazaka, kana, v'nechse hager, just eating fruit off the property, as we discussed, loikana, is not enough of a chazaka. So how could we connect these two concepts? Ask the Rashbam, why doesn't the Gemara ask another question? The Mishnah said that if you bring chickens into the house, then it's considered a kinyan. It's considered a chazaka. But that, asked the Rashbam, would not be a chazaka b'nechse hager. So the Gemara could have asked that question. So the Rashbam indeed says, the Gemara could have asked the question. But the Gemara already asked two strong questions, so the Gemara didn't bother asking that question. But then the Rashbam attempts to say that it could well be that bringing chickens into the Nechse Hager would be a Maisa Chazaka. Why? Because he says if you bring chickens into the house, you can't just leave the chickens there. You have to close the door. And we certainly know, as the Mishnah says clearly, Nol Godaru Paratz, closing the door, is a valid Maisa Chazaka. So actually, he says, bringing chickens into the Nechse Hager is a Maisa Chazaka, and that's why that wouldn't be a Kashan Ula. But then he himself says, he's not quite certain if that's true. Because it really goes back to an issue that we previously have discussed. What is the definition of null? Is the definition of null closing the door? If that's the definition of null, then yes, bringing chickens into the Nechse Hager, where clearly you're going to have to close the door, is considered a Maisa Chazaka. But we've also learned that possibly the definition of null is putting on a lock. Just because I bring chickens into the house doesn't mean I have to put a lock there. I just have to close the door. And therefore the question would indeed be a good question. Other Mefarshim give a different explanation why bringing chickens into a ger's house would actually be a Maisa Chazaka. Because we learned earlier in our parak that a matziah matzos v'nechse ger, if I put out mattresses on the ger's property, that's considered a Maisa Chazaka. Why? Because I'm getting real benefit from the ger's property. Similarly, being able to use this house, using a ger's house as a chicken coop, would certainly be considered no different than matziah matzos, and the halacha would be that it would actually be a good maisa kinyan, and that's why that's not the question the Gemara asks. Rather, says the Gemara, El Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Avuah, the way to understand our Mishnah is Hocha b'chatzar shutfim maskinim. Our Mishnah is referring to a chatzar that's owned by two shutfim. Shutfim, given that we're partners, we're more tolerant to each other. So just because I put something into that property that I jointly own with somebody else doesn't establish a cheskas tashmish. However, even though I own this property together with somebody else, a mechitza kapti. They are makbid regarding me erecting a mechitza, and therefore if I made a mechitza and he didn't, and my partner didn't protest, a chazaka will be established. There is a machlokes rishonim that's based on the following concept. What are we saying now? That partners have a different tolerance level than everybody else. And partners are more tolerant of each other than perhaps somebody else would be. And therefore, just because I do something in the schatzer doesn't mean that I should have a chazaka. But according to this, if we weren't partners, that I even though I didn't just erect the wall, I just used it, I could establish a chazaka. Debate the Rishonim, how long would it take to establish such a chazaka? Just because is the fact that I have a lower tolerance level only accomplish that I could establish a cheskes tashmish, but I still need to wait 3 years? Or given the fact that there's this low tolerance level, because I'm not a partner here, a cheskes tashmish could be accomplished quicker? Ask the Gemara, is this true? The Bahamod Kadiloi Kapti, the partners don't care if they use each other's property, not for erecting something, just putting something down. But then the Mishnah says, "Masechta Nedarim, Hashutfim Shenadru Anoza Mizeh." That if two partners made a neder, that they can't benefit from each other. The Loch is a Surim LeKanes LeChatzer. They each can't come in to the Chatzer because they're benefiting from each other. And as the Rishonim explained, it makes no difference what size the chatzar is. If it's a chatzar sheyesh b'dei kechaluka, it's a chatzar that is big enough to be divided, or it's a chatzar sheyesh b'dei kechaluka, it's not large enough to be divided. So now the question is, if we're saying that b'hamod kedi, that people don't care, partners don't care about just hamada, so that means me coming into the property that's jointly owned with a shutif, that made a neder that I can't have a nor from him, I'm not benefiting from him, because Hamada is not considered a benefit. So why is it Osir? El Amr of Nachman Amr Bavua, Hocha Berchava Shel Churi Bata Maskinim. Our Mishnah is referring to the backyard. That certainly in the backyard, Bamada Kadilo Kapti, they don't care if somebody just places something. The backyard wasn't used as extensively as the chatzah, which was in front of the homes, but even though it's the backyard, a mechitza kapti. And that's why, if I make a mechitza, a cheskes tashmish will be established, but Hamad itself will not establish the chazaka. So here we have a machloikis rishonim again. How do we understand this teretz? Is this teretz to be understood as a retraction of the previous teretz? And according to that understanding, our Gemara is no longer referring to shutfim. Our Gemara is referring to regular people also. And the Gemara is differentiating by regular people. If by Hamada in the backyard, Chazok is not established, but by building, chazaka is established. That's one approach in the Rishonim. Another approach in the Rishonim is that this Gemara is still referring to shutfim. Why? Because this approach of the Rishonim say that since if we're not talking about shutfim, that the two individuals here are not partners, certainly there's always going to be a kpeda, even by hamada. It's only that we're referring here to shutfim. And given the fact that we're shutfim, and it's referring to the rechava shalachuri abatim, so that causes that by hamad itself, they're not makbid, but they are makbid on mechitza. Rapapa gives a different explanation how to reconcile the two mishnayos. Idi v'chatzar shutfim. Both our mishnah and the mishnah masech nedarim are referring to chatzar shutfim. However, vikad the kapti, vikad the loy kapti. There are people that are particular, and there are people that are not particular. And therefore, gabba b'moina, regarding the subject of our Mishnah, we go l'kula. And this is the way the Rashbam explains what the Gemara means. The Rashbam says as follows. I'm on the property. I have a chazok on the property. And the owner of the property comes and says, your chazok is not a chazok. And I say, if it's not a chazok, why didn't you protest? So you say, you know why I didn't protest? Because I'm one of the people that is not makpid. It doesn't really bother me. It's not that what you're doing is really not that significant that I should have made a mechor, that I should have made a protest. And therefore, since the halacha is safek memayna l'kula, the halacha is lenient, and we don't take, and you didn't necessarily do anything wrong by being on the property, and I don't really care, and that's why I didn't protest, and that's why your chazaka is not a chazaka. But ask the mefarshim on this understanding in the Gemara, what is the basis of this understanding? That I, by using this property, even though maybe I did or didn't have permission, depending if you're makbir or not, didn't do anything wrong, because safek l'mam min l'kula. But asked Rabbi Chanan and many other mefarshim, gezeila, stealing, is asma deraisa. So why doesn't this fall under the category of safek deraisa l'chumra? There's a shaila if you're makbid and I'm not allowed to use this property, or there's a shaila that you're not makbid and I am allowed to use the property. Why doesn't safek deraisa l'chumra teach us that I should not be allowed to use the property unless I'm perfectly certain that I have permission? So the Kuntres HaSfekis answers that by Gzela we're makel by Sfekis. Why? He says, since as we've known, there's a fundamental rule as far as Diri Mominus, a rule that we've mentioned many, many times, the rule of Amoitzi Mechaveroi Oliver Raya, that rule teaches us that we could be more mako with this type of a situation, even though normally the halacha is safek deraisa l'chumra. Another explanation, this explanation given by the Urim V'Tumim, is that when the Torah says the words like sigzoil, the Torah means only something which is gezel vadai, which is certainly gezel. Any situation which is not certainly gezel will not fall under the category of gzela. And that's why in this case it will not be aser, because suffix zela, unlike all other suffix derises, we can be makelin. However, when it comes to surah, where a neder was made that I'm not allowed to benefit from the property, and the question is, was this benefit included or not, gabi surah were machmer. Ravin Amma says, "La'olam le'kapti, shutfim are normally not makbid on each other just for placing things in their jointly owned property. But if that's the case, that a shutfim are not makbid about putting things in jointly owned property, so the question comes up: why is the halacha that if a shutf made a neder that I can't, if my shutf made a neder that I can't benefit from him, I can't place something in that property?" Because that Mishnah, Vahamani, that Mishnah that teaches this stringent rule by Emesech Nedarim, reflects the opinion of Rebbe Lezer. Hamani Rebbe Lezer, the Tanya Rebbe Lezer, Omer, Afilu Vitor Osav Emuda Hano. It was very common that when somebody would buy a certain volume of an item in a store, the storekeeper would give everybody a little extra. I always use the example of a baker's dozen. In certain stores, if you buy a dozen bagels, they'll give you a 13th bagel free. So even though this is not considered a real benefit, because he's not giving me anything special, Rebbe Lezer holds, when it comes to people who are not allowed to benefit from each other, vitor is osur. And since vitor is osur by people who can't benefit from each other, even though it's not really a significant benefit, because I'm not getting anything special, it's still also. Here too, even though people, shutfim, are not makbir and hamada, but people who are not allowed to have anah from each other, there's a very high threshold what you can't benefit from. Says the Gemara, Am Rabbi Yochanan Meshum Rebbe Noah. B'kol shutfim akum zezeh. Shutfim in one chatzar could prevent each other from doing anything in the chatzar that could cause damage, chutz min akfisa, except from doing laundry. Shutfim could prevent each other, can't prevent each other from doing laundry. You can't, because if you won't let your shutif do laundry, the way laundry was done then was they just stood and washed the laundry outdoors. And when the women would do the laundry, they would have to roll up the sleeves. They sometimes would have to roll up their dress. So there's an issue of tznias. And therefore, the partner cannot tell his partners, do the laundry in a public place. They could do the laundry in the chatzar, and the partner can't stop them. The Rishonim point out that even though we're learning now that partners can prevent each other from doing things in a chatzar, that halacha, say the Rishonim, do not apply to the first four amis next to my home. Because as we've learned, the four amis next to the entrance of my home are considered my private chatzar, and there my shutif can't stop me from doing anything. However, the Paiskim do say that's only in a situation where if I'm doing something in the four amis right next to the entrance to my home that won't cause damage to the rest of the chatzar. But if it will cause damage to the rest of the chatzar, my neighbor can prevent me from doing it, except this case, as we're learning that because of the tznius issue. Furthermore, the Sma says that even if the minig hamakim, most people in this place do laundry in a public place, that doesn't change the rule that Al Gemara is saying, where my family, my wife and daughters could say, we want to act in a tznistig fashion and not do laundry in a public place. There's an interesting tshuva from the Maram Shik, who says that a beis hakfaris, a cemetery, is considered a chatzar shutfim. And therefore he says, if there are people who have relatives buried in a cemetery and they want to change, for example, the way the graves are marked, and even if the management, the gaboim, the chevra kadisha, are agreeable, but if the other people aren't agreeable, they're doing things that are different than the accepted minig, it's considered like a chatzar or shutfim. And Al Gemara is teaching us that a chatzar or shutfim is an area where partners can prevent each other from doing anything that isn't typical. The pasuk says, "For oitzim einov meras mera." Somebody has to move his eyes from seeing the wrong thing. Arab chibar abba. What is the pasuk referring to? Zeh she'ena mistakel b'noshim she'ena tzal kfisa. The pasuk is saying that you shouldn't look at women who are standing doing the laundry, as we said, because there's a tznius issue. And as the Mashal points out, the Gemara now asks, "Hey chidami, exactly what is the case?" So, explains the Mashal, why does the Gemara only ask the question now, after we have what Rav Chiya bar Abba says? Says the Mashal, if we would learn the pasuk pshat, we could say that the pasuk is referring to somebody who's sitting in his home, and passing in front of him is a situation which is not a tzniyastigah situation. The pasuk is teaching us that somebody should preferably not look at what's happening. Now, however, that the pasuk is referring that I'm walking in the street, so I have to walk in the street. So what should I do? Hey chidami, what should I do? Ida ikedakar achrita. If there's another way to walk here, Rasha hu. I'm a Rasha if I walk in a way that will cause me to see things I'm not allowed to see. If, on the other hand, the lekadaka achrita, there is no other way, honest hu. So what should I do? Answers the Gemara, loyalam de lekadaka achrita. The pasuk the Gemara is referring to a situation where there is no other way. Still, A person should have to be super careful when it comes to these issues, as the Chafetz Chaim explains, that even though in all other areas of halacha we have a concept onus rachmana patre, here we have to be stricter because the isser of looking at what we're not supposed to look is very, very strict. And that's why the Torah goes out of its way, the pasuk goes out of its way, that even though you have no other way of walking, you should still, if you have to walk, close your eyes, turn the other way, or do anything that's more, that will prevent you from seeing it. And as the Mefarshim explain, because since the Torah uses the words, v'nishmarta mikol davara, and the Torah, by using those words, is actually teaching us that a person has to go out of his way not to see something that he's not supposed to see. That's why this is different than any other situation of oinus. In fact, the Alshech explains that the Pasuk says in Parashas Noach, V'yikach shem v'yefes as a simla, v'yisim al-shneyem, v'yelchu achronis as eretz, so he asked, why does the pasuk say, why is the pasuk is so lengthy? Why does the pasuk keep on repeating the same point that they did everything to avoid seeing what they weren't supposed to see? So he explains that this is the exact same concept as our Gemara. There, they were going to do the right thing. They were going to cover the error of the father. And it's impossible not to get close to the father if they want to cover his erva. Yet the Torah says, yes, they have to get close if they want to do what they have to do. But the Torah still tells us, upneim achronis, v'yichas upneim achronis, twice, to do everything to avoid seeing what you shouldn't see. Although, I did see a tshuva from the B'tzel HaChokhmah, that says even though our Gemara is teaching us you have to avoid seeing what you're not supposed to see, the din is, we know that when somebody sees a king or a queen, it's not quite sure if it's the king or queen of contemporary times, we make a bracha. So is one allowed to look at a queen even though it involves looking at a woman? Says the B'tzel HaChokhmah, since he's not being mistakel, he's not really paying strong attention, he's just noticing her, it's mutter if his goal is to be able to make that bracha. How does the Talmud Chacham's suit look, cloak look? Says the Gemara, "Kosh ein near boss, kosh ein boss near mitachtov." So Pasha Pshat in the Gemara is that he wears a very long coat, that their feet, that they typically walked around barefoot, should be covered. Machloikis, what's the din by an Amoritz? Can Amoritz wear such a long coat? Some say if an Amoritz wants to be machmer, he may. Others say he may not. Another pshat is that a pidrush chaluk shatam chokhm keitzad kosh ein besar nir mitachtav, means besar means the gashmius. What is the way of a Talmud Chacham? The way of a Talmud Chacham is that all of his kavana is for ruchnius, not for besari, not for the gashmius. Talish Talmud Chacham keitzad, kol shein chalukai nir mitachtav tefach. That the tefach of the, there isn't a tefach of the other garment that he's wearing, this is the outer garment, there is, it's so long that a tefach of the inner garment doesn't show below the hem of the outer garment. Shulchan shel Talmud Chacham keitzad. How does the shulchan of a Talmud Chacham look? Says the Gemara, shnei shlishi gdil, 2/3 of the table should be covered with a cloth, v'shlosh galoy, and then 1/3 is left uncovered, v'olof karas v'yerek, and that's where you put the vegetables and the food on the uncovered part. Pasha Pshat in the Gemara is that a Talmud Chacham is always neat and clean, and the food could spill on the tablecloth and make the tablecloth dirty, and therefore food, you leave 1/3 open where you're going to put the food that it can't get it dirty. Another Pshat that said is that the Talmud Chacham is showing that he's not just thinking about eating. And therefore, he doesn't keep the entire table full of food. He only fills up the table by two-thirds. Another pshat that I saw, again, a pidrush, very interesting pshat, is that the Talmud Yaakov Yosef says that a person who has to work should divide his day in three. One-third of the day he should daven and learn. One-third of the day he should work. And one-third of the day he should sleep. He actually says, the Pasuk alludes to this. The Pasuk says, Oz Taskel, Oz, Aleph Zion is 8. 8 hours you should learn. Oz Tatzliach, 8 hours you should do business. Yushanti Oz, and sleep for 8 hours. And that's what the Gemara says is the way of a Talmud Chacham. The way of a Talmud Chacham is that he spends two-thirds of the day up doing what he has to do, and one-third of the day doing his basic bodily needs. Sleeping is the most base need, and that's the way a Talmud Chacham should act. Another pshat that I saw from the Shlo, beautiful pshat. The Shlo says that a person, when he's sitting at his table, could actually do two mitzvahs. One mitzvah he could do is that he can invite poor people, b'machnas oruchim, to eat at his table. Another mitzvah he could do is say divrei Torah at the table. Says the Gemara, if the Talmud Chacham, who acts properly, spends two-thirds of his table doing mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Hachnosis Orchim and the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, then the third, the part that he just sits there to eat, will also show that everything he does is L'Shem Shemayim. Everything he's doing is just because he's doing it for a mitzvah, and even the eating, therefore, will be considered a mitzvah. V'tabata mechutz. They used to have on the table a hook that they would hang the tablecloth on after using it. So says Rabbi Noah that this hook should be put opposite the side where the people are sitting. Ask the Gemara of Tanya Tabata b'mifnim. It should be where they're sitting. And says the Gemara Lakasha, Hadi Yinuka, if there's a small child, if this, it should be put on the outside, so the children shouldn't play with it. Hadaleki Yinuka, it could be put on the inside, we're not worried about the child playing with it. Vibai say Mahava Hadaleki Yinuka. If there's a waiter, so it's put on the inside, because if it's put on the outside, the waiter could hurt himself by banging into it. Hadaleki Yinuka, Hadaleki Shama, if there is no waiter, so we don't have that concern, so it could be put on the outside. Vibai say Mahava. It's referring to where there is a waiter. By day, the waiter will see the hook, and therefore he can watch out for it, and it could be put on the outside. By night, he can't see it, so you have to put it in a place where he won't hurt him. Amaretz, says the Gemara Daima, how does the table of the Amaretz look? Madura, like a fire. The Kederis, by Kifas Asai, with pots all around it. There's food all over, it's messy, and it's all just food. Mitash HaTamad Chochem Ketzat, how does the bed of a Talmud Chochem look? Kol Shein Tachtel of Sandlin B'Moisa Chama. There's only shoes, sandalim, in the summer, or menalim and shoes B'Moisa Chama in the winter. Balam Oretz, Daimel Oitzibolim. Because Posh Pshat, it's not sneistig to have under a bed different things, because that will cause people to come look what's doing under the bed, and therefore Amoritz, who's not sneezing, keeps all sorts of things under his bed. Talmud Chacham only keeps his shoes under the bed. Some cipher, another pshat is that there's a ruach atuma under the bed, because that, and that's why we have to wash negavasser when we get up in the morning. So Talmud Chacham doesn't want anything to be affected by the Ruach HaTumah. So the only thing he keeps under his bed is his shoes. Tamaritz is not careful about that, about different things being under the bed that will be affected by Ruach HaTumah. The Chassam Sofer, however, says a different pshat. A Talmud Chacham spends as the minimal amount of time in bed. He has to go to sleep, he goes to sleep. And when he wakes up in the morning, he immediately jumps up and goes to do, to learn, to daven, to do what he has to do. And Amaretz, however, is lazy. He tarries in bed. And that's what the Gemara says. Talmid Chacham only has his shoes under his bed. As soon as he gets up, he jumps out of bed, puts on his shoes, and goes to do what he has to do. The Amaretz, however, spends a lot of time in his bed. He has an Oitzah Balam. He's busy in the bed with all sorts of different thinking. He's thinking and doing. He isn't just on the bed to sleep and go on to do what he's supposed to do. What we're supposed to do is go on right away, jump out of bed to learn Torah and daven.